Welcome into a finals week edition of Armchair Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Just wanted to give you a quick recap of game two. We've now seen two games of the NBA Finals in 2017. Supposed to be a series of amazing expectations, and instead it's been a series of amazing letdown. We haven't seen a complete game out of both teams yet. Cleveland's pulled their starters with over 3 minutes to go in both games now. They've lost both games. Golden State has looked on fire. They've gotten different stuff from different guys both times. Cleveland has gotten basically the same thing from their big three both times now. Not a complete game out of anybody. It's just getting depressing because I'm not sure we're going to get the series we wanted. I was hoping after that really depressing and disappointing game one that Cleveland would come out really physical and ready to win, and they did, but they couldn't finish the job. And you know, that's necessarily a slight against them. This is Golden State after all. They being Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. I mean, just an amazing mountain of a battle they're gonna have to try to win this championship. And now it's looking like it's gonna be a huge battle just to get a game or two out of the series, which maybe that's where the expectation should have been all along, but fair or not, we all thought it would be an amazing series the way the first two rounds of these teams went through in this trilogy now, and we're just not getting that yet. But back to a bigger issue that we talked about last week. Steph Curry, if you can hear this, please, please stop chewing on your mouth guard. It's driving me crazy. Every time the camera's on that guy, he's either laughing about something or chewing on his mouth guard, and 90% of the time it's chewing on the mouth guard. He can laugh and act annoying about anything he wants, but please stop chewing on the mouth guard. I don't even know why he wears it. No one else in the league seems to. We'll move on from that for this week, but that's just something that it's a little pet peeve of mine that I'm really tired of watching him chew on his mouth guard in my high definition broadcast. So if anybody out there can get this to Steph, please, we're begging you. Enough is enough. So let's circle over to Golden State now has a 2-0 series lead. They're looking like they're capable of sweeping Cleveland. I think Cleveland will win at least one of their games at home, but I don't know if they're really going to do two at home. I really have a hard time believing that the change of scenery will be that drastic for Golden State, but we'll get into that in a minute. Right now, let's talk about how Golden State has done this. So first of all, they've gotten everybody involved, which Cleveland's had a really hard time doing, and that is probably the biggest problem they're going to face, is Golden State spreads the ball around so well. They're looking like a late 90s, early 2000s San Antonio team, where you have some of the best players in the league, but you're not playing selfishly. You're getting the ball to everybody. You're not playing hero ball. You're not holding the ball. You're not taking every shot. You're spreading the wealth around, and that's something they've done really well. And I don't know how much of that is Steve Kerr's system, which, by the way, welcome back to Mr. Steve Kerr. It was really neat seeing him on the sideline again in game two after he hadn't coached since game one or two of the Portland series back in the first round of this year's playoffs. So welcome back to him. It looks like Golden State is just fine whether they have him on the sideline or Mike Brown or both of them. So, unfortunately for Cleveland, who has Tyronn Lue, who it still remains to be seen how much of his coaching is impacting this series and how much is just he's there because they have to have a coach. But back to how is Golden State doing this? So, they're spreading the ball around. They're making it so that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Kevin Durant can all pass the ball around and not have to rely on any one of them having to have the ball. And then even when they have some of their lesser-known guys coming in off the bench, they're still passing the ball to those guys. They're not making them earn their keep on the floor. They're making sure to get them involved because that ultimately takes pressure off of their superstars. And I feel like Cleveland needs to figure out how to do that. They don't obviously have the wealth of talent that Golden State does, both on the bench and on the starters. But they have a good amount of talent, enough that they could probably do something about it if they wanted to. But right now, they get in a habit of spreading the ball around, and then as soon as one of their guys gets hot, they seem to move the ball back to that guy over and over until Golden State adjusts, and then now they've got to figure out who to feed it into next time. If they can get to a point where they're making that extra pass, they're making the defense really figure out where the ball is going and who's shooting, that's only going to work in their favor. I feel like I see Durant and Green and Curry and Thompson all taking shots, but I haven't seen any of them be really aggressive and calling for the ball. They all seem to just pass to whoever's open, and if they're the open guy, they take the shot. If they're not open, a lot of the time they pass it the additional pass that made the Spurs so special in the 2000s, and now it's making Golden State really special. And I don't think it's any secret that Steve Kerr was a part of that Spurs franchise that won 5 titles. So we'll see what he can do in games 3 and 4 in Cleveland. But so far in games 1 and 2, with or without his influence, Golden State just ran out to a 2-0 lead. This one looked pretty close, a lot closer than game 1 for at least 3 quarters. But then the 4th quarter, Golden State just pulled too far away. And then yet again, Tyronn Lue waving the white flag with 3 minutes or 4 minutes to go in both games now. Benching his starters, even though Golden State's keeping their starters in, I don't get it. I would honestly make Golden State wait to bench their starters before I benched mine, but I'm not a coach in the NBA, and we'll see what Lue can do in games 3 and 4 in Cleveland. But so far in 1 and 2, I'm not impressed with his coaching, so we'll see what he can do. But the biggest reason for Golden State's success has been their big three. All three of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant have just been phenomenal. And even when they're not shooting lights out, they're running around and getting rebounds or getting assists or getting steals or putting pressure on Cleveland to do things on both offense and defense. And that's something we're just not seeing from Cleveland's big three, at least not yet. In game 1, Cleveland was a big 2 with a big question mark as a third piece, and you got big games out of LeBron and Kyrie, and then Kevin Love was kind of a non-factor. He got a ton of rebounds, but he didn't do much on the scoring side. We need a big, complete game out of him, and I feel like they got that in the first half. In the second half, he kind of took a back seat, and I don't know how much of that was he wanted to take a back seat and how much was he was told to, or if it was just a mixture, or if it's just they didn't really plan to involve him the way they did early on in the first and second quarter, and now in the second half he just didn't get the ball as much, but just didn't feel like he was as big a part of the offense as he was in the first half in the second half. And comparably, Kyrie Irving was not much of a factor in the first half, but then he really took it on himself to get the ball a lot in the second half. And right there is that kind of selfish offense I was talking about, where you don't have guys that are just willing to pass the ball and get the open guy the ball. You have a pretty selfish offense, if I'm being honest, where you have LeBron who wants the ball in his hands a lot of the time, maybe 3/4 of the time. Then he gets kind of relaxed, and actually it seems like he gets frustrated and wants his guys to do more so he's not doing everything. And he starts forcing passes when he probably should be taking shots and driving to the basketball or to the basketball hoop. And then you have Kyrie Irving who kind of does the same thing. And you have Kevin Love who does like to make the extra pass. But there's a lot of times that he should just take the darn shot, and he doesn't, and I'm not sure why. Maybe he's being told to, maybe he's not. Maybe it's just he was told not to for so long that now he's not sure if he should, if he's not getting past the ball. And then you have J.R. Smith, who's a wild card. When he's on, he is on. But like Alan Crabb in Portland, he has so many off-shooting nights that you never know what you're going to get out of him, and he's not the greatest defender. And he's kind of undersized for a shooting guard, and he's a bit of a head case. So I don't really know how much Cleveland can expect to get out of him. So you really have LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love, and you need to have all three of them get complete games. And so far, we haven't had that. When you're down by 20 or more at 3 minutes to go against Golden State in the finals 2 games in a row, that to me screams that you don't know what you're doing. And I don't know that it's so much that Golden State is this unbeatable juggernaut. I think that's definitely part of it. But I think it's also that Cleveland is not doing things as smart as they should. You know, I don't think that Tyronn Lue is the play caller and magician that Steve Kerr is on the sideline, but I think he's still a talented point guard and a talented head coach, and he should be able to drop some different plays for Cleveland to run. But he also seems to wait till things are getting out of hand to call timeouts, and I think he needs to be a little more aware of that. And he maybe needs to make LeBron take a back seat and make him pass the ball a little extra. And I don't know if LeBron's going to listen to him, because LeBron's track record of listening to coaches is not great, but whatever needs to get done is not getting done. We can't expect Cleveland to play a perfect game for 4 games in a row or 3 games in a row plus an extra one. it's going to take a lot of that for them to win a game or two in this series. And I don't know how many perfect games they can play or how many amazing games they can play. I mean, LeBron James finished with a triple-double tonight, and he still left some points on the court. So I don't know if we're expecting too much out of him, or if he's expecting too much out of himself, or he's not expecting enough out of himself, or he's expecting too much out of a supporting cast that just isn't quite there. Because the other side of this is that Golden State's three-point shooting is just head and shoulders better than what Cleveland is doing. You have Kevin Durant, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, Steph Curry, who is the best three-point shooter in the league, and Klay Thompson is probably the second best three-point shooter in the league. And you guys can look up all the stats you want and tell me there are other guys this year that were better, but that doesn't matter to me because, A, those guys are not in this series, and B, just because they may not have had the best season they've had ever, they're still the best in the league. I mean, there's just no one better. I don't care who you throw at them. You know, you could say Steph Curry is not the best three-point shooter in the league this year because he didn't lead the league in three-point percentage, but I'm sorry, that doesn't tell the whole story. Stats do lie occasionally. And right now, at least in this series, Steph Curry is the best three-point shooter. And then number two is Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson isn't a guy that's going to give you 30 points a night. He doesn't even always give you 20 points a night. But what he does give you is the ability to hit a three-pointer when it's just a dagger in the heart of the opponent. And how many times did we see Cleveland coming back from a deficit in games one and two, and Klay Thompson just hit a dagger three? And then now you've got Steph Curry, who's shooting from the 28-foot mark or thereabouts, just showing off how amazing his shot is. And then you've got Kevin Durant, who just gets open, and Andre Iguodala, who just gets open, and Draymond Green, who just gets open. And all of them can shoot the three and shoot it really well. And then you've got Cleveland, who has LeBron, who's an above-average three-point shooter. You have Kyrie Irving, who's above average, and Kevin Love, who's above average, but none of them are among the elite three-point shooters in the league. They miss a lot more than they make. And that just isn't going to work, because when you're trying to fight back from a deficit, you've got to have guys that can consistently connect. And if you've got a mixture of hero ball and shooting desperation threes, I just don't feel like that's a formula for success. But we'll see what they do in games three and four when they're on their home court. You could just say that this is Golden State playing lights out at home, and maybe that's the case, and maybe Cleveland isn't as good on the road, especially in Oracle, as they are at home, although they've been a better team on the road in the playoffs. It seems like LeBron James enjoys playing on the road, but we'll see what happens. We've got a couple days for them to rest up and get back to square one, and we'll see what they do with that. But the big thing that's happening right now is you've got Golden State, who just looks like they're amazing on offense, and they've got all of Cleveland's schemes figured out, and then you've got Cleveland, who just seems like they're trying to play catch up too much, and I just don't know how that's going to work. Let's put the focus and the spotlight on LeBron. I talked about this in last week's episode, and I want to get back on this again. First of all, I want to thank him because he wears a mouth guard the same way that Steph Curry does, but I've never seen him chewing on it in the middle, in between plays, and I just want to thank him for that before I say what I'm going to say next. And what I'm going to say next is that he has to have a legendary performance for the remainder of this series, or his team is shot and his title chances are shot. And I know that that's a really crazy thing for me to say, because he's already had a legendary performance in this series. If you just put his numbers against what some of the other greats of the game have done in finals before him, he's right up there where he needs to be. The problem is he's playing on a team that does not have the talent level that some of these other teams and dynasties had. And he has to consistently make up for that gap. And I feel like it's weird that we have to say that over and over. And I know that he hears that, whether he says he does or not. He has to find a way to make up for that lack of talent. He's not going to be able to make J.R. Smith be Klay Thompson. He's not going to be able to make Iman Shumpert be Steph Curry. He's not going to make Kyrie Irving Steph Curry. He needs to somehow make them all good enough that when he's playing lights out, that when they play almost lights out, it's as good or better than what Golden State's doing. But right now, Golden State is doing such a good job of that the amount of points that he's going to have to make up is around the 20-point level. So he needs to somehow score 10 more a game and then come up with 10 more from his supporting cast. And I don't know how easy that sounds. It sounds impossible to me against this team, but you never know. You could get a miracle. It's never too late. But basically, he's got to have a performance that we will talk about for decades. And right now, the way this performance is going, even if they were winning this series, I don't think we'd be talking about it as a legendary performance. You know, triple doubles are great, but when your team's not winning or not winning handily, it doesn't look very good. It looks like you're just adjusting and not performing. And I think he's doing a lot of adjusting, and he just looks tired. He looks like he's worn out, and he looks like he's just been run ragged because he plays so many minutes, and he averages usually more points per game than minutes per game, which is crazy because most guys, it's the opposite that's true. And he still gets you something around 10 assists and 10 rebounds and a couple steals. And it's ridiculous that we look at those numbers and say 30, 10, 10, and 2 is not good enough. But that's where we're at right now, where the supporting cast around him, I said it last week and I'll say it again, he's got to have something resembling a 40, 10, 10, and 5 stat line for his team to be successful. And so far, in two games, he has not come even close to that. He's got the two parts of it, but the third and fourth are the 10 extra points and the couple extra steals, and we're just not seeing that. And this is not the young LeBron we're used to. He's a savvy veteran, and he definitely knows how to make plays work for him now instead of just exerting energy all the time. But the simple truth is that he's not as fast and as agile as he used to be. He can still sprint as well as anybody in the open court, but as far as keeping up with guys like Steph Curry when they're doing these ankle-breaking crossover dribbles, he's just not that guy anymore. And Kyrie, sadly, on defense, is not that guy either. So I don't know where this comes from, but somebody's got to make up the difference. And the next part of that is, are Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving enough? I mean, even if they can figure out how to play where Kevin Love is being a little more selfish with the ball, he's being a little too selfless right now. And then you got Kyrie, who needs to tone down the hero ball. It seems like whenever he feels like he hasn't had the ball in his hands enough, he just jumps in and takes over. And it ends up being a lot of wild shots. I think of him as like a really, really talented Jared Bayless, who used to play in Portland. And he would just barrel into the lane and throw the ball up for grabs and kind of freak out when he didn't get a foul call. And that's kind of what Kyrie's game looks like. He does a lot more of the Steph Curry crossover and crazy ankle-breaking dribbles, but then the next play is just him diving sideways trying to get the ball up into the hoop, and sometimes it goes in, it looks incredible, and when it doesn't, it just looks like a really bad and low-percentage shot, and I feel like we need more of him being a moving piece and becoming more like a Ray Allen in this offense than being a Jared Bayless. No one wants to be a Jared Bayless. So even if Kevin Love can play where he's scoring 20 points and getting around 8 to 10 rebounds, and he's floating around the perimeter, and then Kyrie is doing enough to get some open shots and take the ball out of LeBron's hands for about half the game so that he's not doing everything on his own and getting exhausted, but then he's also got to play some defense on Steph Curry. There were plenty of times where he switched off Steph. I don't know why that is, because those two should be going head-to-head, and they're not, and I don't know why that is, but I guess we'll find out if that's the right call or not as the series continues. So then the other part is David West and JaVale McGee, who are the reserve power forward and centers for Golden State, are actually probably better at how their performances are going anyway in this series than Cleveland starters at center and power forward. And that's terrifying, if I'm being frank, because when you can basically make Draymond Green expendable, which is what they've done, because they can either of them come in and play defense the way he does and also throw a bunch of offense around, it's scary because Cleveland doesn't have that kind of depth. They thought they were going to when they got Andrew Bokeh, but they just don't. And it's really frightening that Tristan Thompson's going to continue to be their center, because he had a much better game in game two than he did in game one. But it was still an incomplete performance. He still looks like he's reaching. And I felt like last year when they had him in, it was an improvement over Timothy Mozgov. And this year it seems like Golden State's made adjustments. They've got guys that are tall and long and are able to reach around and get rebounds that he's not getting. And they're able to reach up and get rebounds he's not getting. They're able to reach and tip balls that he's not getting. And I just feel as a center, he's got to do more than what he's doing. And I know that that's a lot of pressure because he's not the tallest or the longest or the biggest guy, but that's the task at hand. You know, it may not be realistic, but if they're going to win, he's got to play out of his mind. He's got to have a Magic Johnson rookie year finals performance playing center out of position. And if he can't do that, I don't know what they're going to do. But when you're able to take Draymond Green, who's most likely going to be named the Defensive Player of the Year, or at least be a strong candidate for the award, and you can make him expendable, that's insane. Because he used to be a key cog in this offense and defense, and now they've got such great depth that he's allowed to get these fouls and go take a few minutes off on the bench. And they've got guys that can come in and just keep the whole game plan going the way it would have if he was in the game with no fouls or just enough fouls. And Cleveland doesn't have anything like that. If any of their starting five get in foul trouble, they're in big trouble because they don't have anybody on the bench that can come in and provide the same punch that those guys do. So we'll see how that goes. I'm just terrified for Cleveland right now because I really thought that they might come back in game two and if not win, at least keep it really close. And anyone who didn't watch, the final score was not a fair representation of the first three quarters, but it's a very fair representation of how well Golden State played. They scored as many points they did for a reason, but Cleveland could have had the game be closer, but again, they pulled their stars with over 3 minutes to go, which is ridiculous. That just looks cowardly to me. I don't understand why they're not pushing for at least a respectable deficit. But then they also just, they weren't playing consistent basketball for four quarters, whereas Golden State was. They kept staying with the process and trusting the process and trusting that what Steve Kerr and Mike Brown have them doing is important and trusting their teammates. And I just don't see that out of Cleveland. So we'll see if they can go home and play on Wednesday night and get a win and get back in the series. But shoot, if they don't win one in game three, this series has got to be over. I mean, 3-0, how do you come back from that? I mean, as impressive as their 3-1 recovery was last year, 3-0 would be record-breaking. I'd have to look up the numbers. I don't think anybody's ever done that in the history of the NBA. I don't think anybody ever come back from 3-1 before. So we'll see if anybody can come back from 3-0. But if Cleveland can't get a win in Cleveland on Wednesday, this series could be over very quickly, and that's going to be really disappointing because these playoffs have been just awful, and we needed a good series to pull us out of this funk we're in, but we'll see if they can do it. And the big part of that is, how does Cleveland stay on task and keep everyone involved? Because we really liked what we saw from Kevin Love in the first half tonight, and he was getting involved. They were getting him involved. He was calling for the ball on the post. He was shooting threes. He was getting rebounds. He was trying to block shots. And it just looked great. But then the problem is they gave him the ball so much, Kyrie seemed to get, he seemed to be feeling left out. And so then in the second half, he had the ball a lot more than Love did. They've got to figure out a way to get all three of them happy and contributing, because without all three of them having the games of their lives, these next few games, there's only five left in this series if they really want to win. I don't think that they can win four in a row, so they're going to have to win three in a row. Or win one, give up one, and win three. I mean, however you want to do the math, they've got to win four games out of the next five. It's ridiculous. And we'll see if they can do that. I don't think they can, but, you know, bigger things have happened that I didn't predict, so we'll see, but I just don't know that the change of scenery will be a lifeline for them. And I think that's what they're hoping, is that getting home on their home court with their home crowd will get them the win they need. And it's just, that's not how life works. You got to work hard at it. And if it doesn't work out and they go into game four down 3-0, I think that's it. I mean, I think they'll probably still fight hard in game four, but I think by then they'll know that the win's out of their sails and that's it. So we'll see what happens when the series comes back to Cleveland on Wednesday. But until then, we'll just know that Cleveland's got some work to do. Tyler and Lou's got to come up with some better plays and some better matchups, and we'll see what they can come up with. But for now, this series looks like it's dead in the water, and we'll just have to hope that they can do something about it to give us the really neat series we were hoping for. So we'll move over to a new category. We've got a few minutes left in the show, trying to get everybody out of here in 30 minutes or less, and we're at about the 25-minute mark. One of the other series that is going on right now is summer movies, and summer's right around the corner. It's only the first week in June, but we've only got a couple weeks to go, and we're already in the summer movie business. We had the release of Wonder Woman this past weekend, and I don't know about you, but that movie looks amazing. Really neat to see a female superhero finally at the forefront. We've seen so many guys dress in tights, and it's nice to see a girl taking on the superhero costume and showing what a tough girl can do. And it's really just a strong presence for women everywhere, and we're excited about that. And not only that, but it looks like it's DC's first really good comic book movie since The Dark Knight Rises, which came out years and years ago. And I mean, we've got a whole new Batman since then. That's what's crazy. And we've had Superman, we've had Batman, we've had all these guys, and now they're coming out with the Justice League movie, and yet this Wonder Woman movie actually looks really good, which is even more impressive since Batman vs. Superman was such a steaming pile of garbage. And Wonder Woman was in that movie, and she was probably one of the redeeming qualities of it because the character was great, the actress was great, and it was just really a way to transition her into her own movie until they get her into Justice League. But I think it's going to be a really good one. I'm excited for it. The other ones I'm excited about that are coming out soon are Spider-Man Homecoming, which is the reboot of the reboot of Spider-Man. We're now going to have three Spider-Mans in, I think, inside of 10 years, which is just nuts. But, you know, they already took Tobey Maguire out of the mix, and now they've got Andrew Garfield, who was in a couple, and he's out. And so now you've got Tom Holland, who I'm hoping will be really good. He looks like a young Anton Yelchin, and he kind of sounds like one, too. And, you know, it was really sad that he passed over last summer in a really crazy accident where he had his car roll onto him in the driveway or something like that. But this kid looks really like he's going to be a really good pick for the role, and they're trying to go young so they can make him into a part of the Avengers. And, you know, having Tony Stark in the movie is definitely not a bad idea. Everybody loves that. And then you've also got a new Thor movie coming out in November that looks really good, but that's not a summer movie. A few others that I'm really excited about are Baby Driver, which is a really neat heist movie. It's got a really amazing cast, and it's a British movie, and it looks a lot like a Guy Ritchie movie, but it's not. And it just looks like a really fun movie. It's got 100% Rotten Tomatoes, and if you haven't seen the preview for that, go check it out. Like I said, amazing ensemble cast. The story looks interesting. It kind of looks like if Snatch and Fast and Furious became one movie. It just looks really neat. And then there's a new Transformers movie coming out, because they come out with a new one every couple years, it seems like, even though the story should have died about 8 movies ago, and there's only 5 in the series so far. And it looks interesting, except like everything else these days, they've got the main character going rogue, and so this one looks like Optimus Prime is going to be an evil guy for once, which is really bizarre. We'll kind of see if that's accurate or not. You have, I don't know if it's a reboot or a remake or what it is, but it's a new Mummy movie. It's not the 1930s movie. It's not the one with Brendan Fraser from the late 90s. It's something new with Tom Cruise, and the mummy is female, which is really interesting. And she's, you know, a queen that was cursed and entombed alive and mummified alive, and now she's back to get revenge, I guess. I'm not sure what they're going to do with it, but it looks interesting. Each trailer I see, it looks a little bit better. And if you haven't seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet, go see that. That's kind of a weird segue, but I just saw that over the weekend and it was amazing. And they had a trailer for The Mummy in the theater before that, so just kind of got me thinking about that. But if you haven't seen it and you've seen the first one and liked it, you'll like this one. This one's a little more comical and sentimental, because it's about Peter Quill meeting his father, and a lot of the story is revolving around that. But it's still really good, and I hope they're building up for a really amazing showdown in the third one. But I won't say any more than that, because I don't want to give anything away. But check it out if you haven't already. And then we've also got War for Planet of the Apes coming up, which is another installment in that franchise. You've got Atomic Blonde, which the Charlize Theron movie that looks really good. And Dunkirk, which is Christopher Nolan's latest movie about a really important part of World War II, and he's been working on it. It's a passion of his, and it looks really, really good, and it's got a great cast. And the guy just makes good movies. I think you'd have to really look for one of his that you didn't like, so check that out when it comes out. And there's also a couple of TV series wrapping up here in next couple weeks. Better Call Saul is one of my favorites, and they're about to wrap up. Gotham is another one I can't get out of my head, and it's starting to wrap up. It's getting kind of crazy. I'm not sure about the writing anymore, but it's still really entertaining. And then Fargo has been just tremendous for a third straight season, and each one is different. I don't, for those of you that haven't seen it, it's, if you've seen True Detective, it's like that. It's an anthology series. No two seasons are connected. No two seasons have the same cast. In fact, I don't even think they have the same writers or directors, but it's just, it's really, really well done and really good. And if you haven't checked that out, start with season one and work your way up. But again, they're not connected, so you don't really have to. You can watch season three and then work your way backward if you wanted to. This one still has about 3 episodes left to go, and it's just an incredible story and an incredible mystery, and I'm really curious to see how it goes. And then Better Call Saul, you know, for anyone who's a Breaking Bad fan that hasn't checked it out, I don't know what you're waiting for. It's a really great show, and Saul is one of my favorite characters from Breaking Bad, so I was really happy they gave him his own series, and this is a prequel showing how he went from just a small-time lawyer to the criminal lawyer in Albuquerque, or the ABQ, as Jesse liked to say. But if you haven't checked those out, do. And same with Gotham. You know, it's a little outlandish and kind of crazy at times, but it's a Fox comic book show, so what can you expect? But all those are good, and all those movies look really interesting. And, you know, again, if you haven't seen Guardians, go out and see it. If you haven't seen Wonder Woman, go out and see it. Look forward to those other ones coming out. Check out Better Call Saul, Gotham, and Fargo. And we'll just see what happens after that. And we're over the 30-minute mark, so we got to get going. But really appreciate you guys listening to the show. And want to give a shout-out to Liebecker, who provides music for the show. They're a great band from the Great Northwest, and we really appreciate them providing music. If you haven't checked them out, please do so at www.liebeckermusic.com. Thank you again for listening. This has been Armchair Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. We'll see you on the next episode. Hopefully Game 3 of the NBA Finals is up to snuff, but if it's not, I guess there's always next year.